Good. We're on the move. All right, ladies and gents, several announcements at the moment. We are coming to the end of this unit, so anybody who can relay information to our absentees, of whom there are a significant number, and you can put the phone away. It's not the time to be playing with your toys. Okay. I don't know what's on that computer screen. But in any case, we've got a busy week ahead. So let me tell you what's up. You can see pretty much the gist of the lesson right up on the blackboard, and we're going to get to it pretty fast. But we are reaching the end of the unit. Tomorrow is the last thing we do, if we're efficient about it. Wednesday's going to be a review day. We're headed towards a test on Thursday.
Is there an essay?
There will always be an essay on a test I give you. Always.
I mean, like, but not a separate essay?
No. No, this is built in. The research paper is going to be due a week from Thursday. Now, the reason why I'm timing it this way is because, first off, I want you to have a long weekend entirely off from history, and I don't want you having to worry about turning in your research papers the very day you're back from the long break. I want to give you a little cushion on that. That's why they're doing the 21st rather than the 20th. So please keep that in mind. And so that's where we stand at the moment. Just wanted to let you guys know. So we have Alexander to do. And here's what we're going to do. I'm going to ask you to pass your judgment on him, whether he deserves a reputation or not. My early morning class left this proverb behind for you guys to chew on. We'll see whether that applies or not. Again, this is a judgment call that's up to you, but it's based on your knowledge of the material, and it's based on your knowledge of the evidence. So in that respect, you're going to have to do the thinking, you're going to have to do the judging, and you're going to have to do the justifying. For my part, I'll provide a little backstory. The guy was obviously smart enough to understand everything that Aristotle taught him. The guy was charismatic. He could get a following. The guy swallowed the Persian Empire in the space of 8 years. That's not too shabby. And he did it with people traveling on foot. This is not like the Mongols who could travel on horseback. He could be very generous. He could be very open-minded. For example, when he started his conquest, he was convinced that Greek culture was superior to every other culture in the world. As he marched through the Persian Empire, he discovered that places like Egypt and Mesopotamia and Persia had something to offer as well. In fact, he even went so far as to order his officers to marry Persian princesses, which he did himself. He could work his troops hard, so hard that they mutinied when they got to the far eastern end of his conquest. They couldn't stand it anymore. But he was not the sort of general who stood behind his troops in battle. He stood in front of them, and he fought with them. If you read the piece about Alexander and the mutiny, you know that he set an example. So evidently, physically, he was quite tough as well as being intelligent. Let's see what else we could say. Well, there's the other side. He could be vicious. He once had a drunken argument with his best friend and killed him. As you read from the mutiny piece, he could execute people very, very quickly if they got him angry enough. Like his father, he had a couple of addictions. They both were alcoholics. By the time he got to Afghanistan, he discovered opium as well. So he was strung out a lot of the time. Or he was drunk a lot of the time. Maybe not all the time, but a lot of the time. He died, by the way, at the age of 33. He contracted malaria when he got into India. And that added to his addictions. And probably physical exhaustion did him in. When you judge him, you have to judge him on his achievements. He certainly was a spectacular guy. You should be asking yourself how long the empire lasted, what his cultural influence on the world was,
how we changed things, how the world was different as a result of what we did. So these are all things that you should consider. So that having been said, I'm going to show you a couple of overhead maps to give you an idea of what he did further. Incidentally, when he went into battle, almost always his armies were outnumbered by a factor of 10 to 1, which tells you something about his capability. But let's show you two or three overheads. What's that green blob that you see up on the wall?
Persian.
That's the Persian Empire. Okay. Good. This is what he did to it. You notice how it comes in three colors and three stages? Can you see this purple? It almost fades into the wall, but can you make it out? Okay. So we have three stages, the purple phase, the orange phase, and the yellow phase. And basically, this is what happened. He took the purple area in 2 years. He slammed into the Persian Empire in 334 BC. By 332, he had this. This orange area is the heartland of the empire, including the capital city of Persepolis, which is now nothing but a bunch of pillars standing in the sand. He leveled the place as much as he could, and there are only a few ruins left. They're spectacular ruins. They're huge, which means this place must have been glorious when it was fully operated, but it's been flattened to the ground and never rebuilt. So this was the heart of the empire, and this is where he cleaned up, and he even went into what was then called India, because here's the Indus River Valley here, what we now call Pakistan. And it even touched just the outer edge of the country we call India now. This is Afghanistan. He built cities, most famous of which is here in Egypt. It didn't exist before Alexander. And as you can see, who do you name it after? That's right. And look up here, north of Afghanistan. Here's another one. And he had all these cities named after himself as he built them. He built them in the Greek style, complete with temples and theaters and all of that stuff. And this is an important thing to keep in mind, because when he started, Greek culture was spread around here and in places around the Black Sea and in various places in the Mediterranean. What do you think he does with Greek culture?
Spreads it all the way through the Middle East.
That's right. He spreads it all the way through Southwest Asia. So what you get is a largely regional or local culture now going global. And get this. Remember the statues that I showed you from various places earlier on in the unit? Just north of here is the Silk Road. So how far east did that Greek artistic influence travel?
To China.
Korea. And indirectly, where else? Even beyond China and India. Go further. Yeah. If you look at the statue of the great Buddha in Kyoto, his robes are draped in poles. That's a Greek influence. Now, the Japanese didn't know that influence was Greek. As far as they were concerned, that was the influence of what country, do you think? China. You know, they had no clue. But by indirection, it was actually Greek. And Alexander is largely responsible for spreading it. He had a profound influence on Russian history. The Russians named several of their czars after him. So he seems to have been pretty big. Now, let me show you something else. If Alexander had wanted to, instead of going this way, around the Mediterranean down to Egypt first, he could have slammed right directly into the heartland of the Persian Empire, and he could have conquered it 2 years earlier. So I'm going to ask you a military question. Why do you think he went down this way first? Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So when they went that way,
let me give you a hint. All of this is coastal area.
Block off trade.
Partly for trade purposes. That's good. Now, Egypt, as it turns out, was one of the Mediterranean's biggest storehouses of guess what?
Grain.
Okay. Now, why is that important?
Because he needs to supply his army.
That's right. He secures a food supply, he can feed his army. And grain travels. Okay? So, he can do that. There's also something else, and here's the hint once again. Coastline.
He has a strong navy.
Yeah, because the Persian navy operated out of here. Okay? If Alexander had gone straight in this direction and got himself tied up here, what could the Persians have done?
Send their navy around?
Yeah, send their navy to strike where?
Behind?
Think it through. Where would you send the navy to strike that would undo everything that Alexander was trying to do?
Macedonia?
Exactly. Hit Greece and Macedonia and cut off his supply line. Then his troops are stuck in here. They starve. And even if they're better than the Persians, can they win?
No.
No, they can't. End of Alexander. Get it? So very intelligently, he bottled up this coast first. Set up the city of Alexandria here, which incidentally he built what became the world's greatest library at the time, one of the greatest libraries the world has ever seen. And then he moved eastward, step by step. First here, eliminate the Persian navy, get his supply line set, then to the heart of the empire, and then to clean up and to go even into India. Now, remember the backstory. He and his officers married Persian princesses. In fact, he married the daughter of the last Persian king, a young lady named Roxanne. I don't know that it was an entirely happy marriage, because here's what happened. When the Persians got defeated in here, the Persian king, Darius III, fled eastward. He was headed towards Central Asia, and one of his own generals caught up with him and killed him in hopes of settling things with Alexander, and brought the king's head back to Alexander. Guess how Alexander responded?
Killed him?
Had the guy beheaded on the spot. Said, it was my business to deal with the Persian king, it was not yours. It was not yours. And he was upset about that, because here's the point. He marries this Persian princess, Roxanne. All right? Does he have a father-in-law anymore? No. How do you think Roxanne would feel about that? Think that one through. And try this. Try this then. Alexander and Roxanne. Did they have any children?
No.
Why not? They were both young, robust people. Why not, do you think? Any guesses? What was Alexander spending most of his time doing?
Drinking.
Yeah, drinking and conquering. All right. Was he at home often?
No.
No, that's why. Now, there's another reason why. And you've learned about it in your health classes. What could that be?
STDs.
No. Didn't have that. No, evidently Alexander and Roxanne were both clean.
Anabolic steroids.
No. The wine and the opium were enough to have him feeling no pain. Alright?
Doesn't that reduce your...
It does reduce performance. Now, impressions at the moment, to the contrary, notwithstanding, this is true. But there's also something else. What else did you learn about in health class that might have something to do with the question, why no children?
Because he was gay.
He was bisexual. He liked both men and women. He was perfectly capable of bed with both sexes. No worries there. You want me to give you the magic word? Contraceptives. Yes, folks, they existed back then. All right.
What's that?
They may have been low-tech versions of the stuff that we use now. No, there was no birth control pill back then. Didn't have that. But there were contraceptives, and as it turned out, in the ancient world, and even up to the sexual revolution of the 1960s, there were generally two classes of women who used them. One class, I would think, is pretty obvious. What's the other? Give you a hint, Roxanne. I gave the other hint, two classes of women who would use contraceptive devices. The first class are obviously the professionals. Who else? Roxanne, Persian princess, folks. Come on, pull it together. What other class of women? Yeah, exactly. Royalty and nobility. Exactly. There you go. Make of it what you will. But that's how it worked. All right. You get the idea?
Why would they do it if they want?
Ah, but remember, what had become of Roxanne's dad? Was she necessarily thrilled to be Alexander's wife?
No.
Okay, well, there's the problem. All right? Now, whether or not they wanted to have children or not, did they?
No.
What's the problem then? Alexander's going to die at the age of 33.
There's no successor.
There's no successor. Uh-oh. So, here's Alexander on his deathbed. It's 323 B.C. He's tossing and turning, afflicted with malaria. Somebody asks him as he lays dying, who's your successor going to be? His aunt, to whom will you leave your empire, he was asked. And Alexander is said to have said, to the strongest. What's that going to do once he dies?
Civil War.
Bingo. Among whom?
His own generals.
Among his own generals. Who weren't as inclined to be as open-minded culturally as he was. They were pretty convinced of the superiority of Greek culture. When they set up their own little division states, they hired Greeks to run them. They didn't hire the local population. So you got this kind of thin layer of Greeks running a lot of non-Greeks. And this is what it looked like. Now, remember this area in the Indus Valley. This is after Alexander. After 40 years of civil war, the dust clears, the corpses are buried, and this is the general result. A bunch of smaller states jockeying against each other. By the way, what's happened to control of the Indus Valley? Can you see it on the map? Yeah, to whom? Go way, way, way back. Indus Valley is part of what country?
China.
Not China. Indus. India. Remember the Mauryan Empire?
Yeah.
Remember Chandragupta Maurya? Right after Alexander. As Alexander's generals fight each other, he moves in from the east and takes this back. So that means the Greeks are chased out of India. And you see all these divisions. Alexandria is still there. This Afghan Alexandria is still up here. Greek culture is still spreading. But you can see this empire falling apart. And eventually what happens, by roughly two centuries after Alexander's death, the Persians have revived themselves in here. They kick the Greeks out. And in this region, Tyre is situated a little bit too far south. This is modern-day Lebanon. But right in here is the state of Israel. You know Hanukkah?
Yeah.
All right. This is Hanukkah. A family of Jewish leaders, the Maccabees, rose up against their Greek rulers, and they reestablished an independent Hebrew state that lasted for about a century until guess who moved in from the west? Who's going to come after Greece?
Rome.
That's right. Exactly. So, Rome will eventually take over all of this. The Persians will take over that. But not before Greek culture has had time to spread. So, there's your backstory. Now it's time for a little vote, and it's time for a little daylight. So while I'm opening the shades and turning on the light, you've got several categories among which to choose. and you can tell me what you think and why you think it, please. That would be most helpful indeed. In fact, the map in your textbook goes even further, talking about the so-called Hellenistic world, because that's what we're in now. This Hellenistic period where Greek culture is going global, most of which is after Alexander, from 338 to 31 BC, at which point the Romans have pretty well moved in and taken things over in the west, and the Persians are back in the east. So, take about a minute, think it through, and let me know what your vote is and why.
Maybe we don't run in circles.
I can do it that way. I'm going to give you another 30 seconds to think it through. And since you've been generous enough to volunteer, I'll start with you casting your vote.
Right. Flashes of greatness are not equal to his reputation.
Oh, okay. Lucas.
Flawed but great.
Oh, great. All right, so we have flawed and flashing.
Got flawed but great.
Unlike the usual pattern, you guys are pretty consistent with the early group. But that having been said, all right, this is gone, right? And this is gone. You're not going for the extremes, right? So it's not. It's clearly in your view, not Alexander the bogus, right? And it's not Alexander the perfect. So let's start out that way. Why do you guys reject the extremes?
Because he wasn't exactly not great, but he wasn't great. I mean, he did some really good things, but he did some bad things too.
Okay, all right. So, I think in the flawed and flashy categories, we'll put his virtues and his faults, okay? All right, over here. His faults over here, the good stuff he did. All right? So, faults, weaknesses, what would you do? We'll start with the negative first, and then we'll go to the brighter side. Either deeds or character. What would you point to? What would you point to that makes him...
Not leaving a successor.
All right.
His empire did once pass before the government.
By the way, who united Greece?
His dad.
His dad did. That's right.
So
we go ahead and start.
Yeah. Oh, okay. In fact, if Philip had not been assassinated, who might we be talking about instead? Yeah, it could be Philip the Great rather than Alexander the Great. But he did get assassinated, so there's no undoing that. All right, anything else?
Overbearing, abused his troops.
Can Can you imagine how the Greeks and Macedonians felt when he started recruiting Persians into the ranks? Because he did towards the end. But he had a reason for it. Why do you think he did that?
Greece put like Persian loyalty in them.
Yeah, that's one reason. That's good.
They couldn't control the whole empire.
That's right. That's right. He needed manpower to control the empire. There wasn't enough in the... you know, all they had to do was look at the 10-to-1 numerical ratio against him, and he realized it's one thing to take an empire, but it's another to keep it. Which do you think is harder, taking an objective or keeping it?
Keeping it.
It requires maintenance, and maintenance is dull. Maintenance is boring. Conquest is exciting. All right? Winning the Super Bowl is glorious. All right? But which is... Look at the Giants next year. What do they have to do?
Start over.
They have to start all over. They have to defend it. It's going to take work. You know, this year they had nothing to lose. Next year, what do they have? Everything to lose. Will that change them psychologically? It's a different game. All right? Okay. Any other faults he had? If you got angry at somebody, what happened?
Killed.
All right. He did have a vicious temper. We'll get to the variable person in a bit. I wonder if this is going to change anybody's mind. Anything else? Okay. What's the neat stuff that he did? Or the neat things about him? On one hand, he could be vicious. On the other, if you pleased him, what could he do?
He could make you a satrap.
He could give you a province to govern. He could reward you. He'll be generous.
He's relatively open-minded culturally.
All right. Was he well educated?
Yes.
Look at the top of the board. All right. Remember Plato's philosopher king? Ask yourselves, does Alexander qualify? Does he measure up to the philosopher king that Plato hoped for in the Republic? Incidentally, do you think Alexander was aware of Plato's writing on the subject? You think he was familiar with it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He knew it was Plato. All right. Anything else? Characterologically, by way of personality, character, or accomplishment.
Well, he was the first to unite Greece and defeat...
He or his father?
Well, his father.
All right, so we could say he kept Greece united.
Conquered Persia.
I'm sorry?
Conquered Persia.
Yeah, did he ever lose a battle? Anything else?
Spread Greek influence.
What evidence do we have of that? And what's his most lasting single monument that still exists today? In fact, I taught a young lady who was maybe one of the 5 or 6 best people I've ever taught, whose parents were from this place. What am I pointing to? It didn't exist before he set it up.
Alexandria.
In what country?
Egypt.
All right. Yeah, the student I'm talking about, he's a pediatrician in Portland, Oregon now. Came quite a gifted family. Alexandrine Greeks. Her father, I don't know if he's alive still. He may be, in which case he'd be somewhere in his 70s. But an engineer by trade who spoke 9 languages.
She functions in four. Greek, French, Spanish, and English. Now, in addition to those languages, her father also spoke Arabic, Russian, German, Danish, and I think Italian.
My neighbor spoke three.
Pardon?
She was like five. She spoke three languages. Because her dad was German. Her mom was Brazilian, and they lived mm-hmm. here.
And why do you think somebody growing up in Alexandria might become multilingual?
Because there are lots of different races.
That's right. It's cultural crossroads. Exactly. Exactly. And Alexander himself had that in mind. That's one reason why he put his library there. Because get this. Once he sets up that city, Alexandria is the intellectual center of the Greek world. Even though it's in Egypt, that means the intellectual center of the Greek world goes to Alexandria from where?
Athens.
What does that mean for Athens' future?
Israel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true. There's a Roman emperor named Hadrian who actually had to go to the trouble of restoring some of Athens' old buildings because Athens had fallen into decline. It was a pretty shabby place by somewhere around 120 AD. After centuries of decline. All right. Anything else about him?
Didn't he fight with his troops? Like
yes. Yes. Did he ever put his troops through anything he wasn't willing to endure himself? Right, so he set the example. So with Alexander, was it do as I say or do as I do?
Do as I do.
Sounds like he wasn't a hypocrite. On the other hand, if he didn't do as he did,
he'd kill you.
He'd be in trouble. Yeah, he didn't take any guff. All right, anything else? We've got about 10 minutes to play with. Let's see what we can say. Has anybody changed his or her mind? Okay. The zeros are gone. Flawed but great. Let's see the hands again. Let's find out whether we still sit where we have. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right, we're sticking. All right. Brendan, you are Flash, right? Flash Newman and Variable Ashley. All right, Brendan, you want to take it away?
No.
What do you think? What do you think the scales tip mainly against Alexander?
Because he really kind of ruined empires he kept and his dad set up because he never appointed a successor.
In other words, even though he didn't have kids, he should have had a plan B.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, and he never did that.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Any other reason?
And it was a very short rule because he died so young.
Okay.
Which didn't really, he couldn't have done that.
All right. Too short to set up anything
yeah.
that was politically durable. Maybe culturally durable, but
yeah.
not politically, right?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else you want to add? All right. Ashley, you look like you're in the half and half camp here. Talk to me.
Okay. Well, see, he did get a head start from his father, but what he did with the small army from still a relatively backwards country, and he could defeat the Persian Empire and go all the way to the Indus River Valley, which was pretty impressive, especially since his enemies were pretty strong. But he wasn't able to keep his empire while he was living. But I agree with Brendan because it wasn't politically lasting. It wasn't as great because he could conquer it, but he couldn't keep it after his death. So it only lasted for his lifetime.
So too much depended on
yeah.
him.
And he wasn't exactly the ideal philosopher king since he cared mainly about his own glory and conquest and not like, what was it, enlightening people or something.
Okay. Okay. Now we have the eight of you. All right? We have the majority vote.
let's see if you can bring Brendan or Ashley around. Get them to change their minds. We'll find out whether you convince them or not. Okay, Ethan, you're in the lead.
You can't really blame someone for dying.
Yeah, this is true. You know, if I suddenly fell in and croaked on the table in front of you, would that necessarily be my fault? Unless I have a lot of bad habits that you don't know about. I'm not telling either. Okay. Can't be blamed for dying. Anything else?
Well, he couldn't really control what happened after other than being your successor. But that wasn't one fault, but that's not as big as the impact he had, like, culturally.
Okay. So you're saying culture overshadows all. The cultural influence was huge, there's no doubt about it. Wade?
I think that his military tactics and being such a good officer, on top of being so educated and pretty much brilliant,
mm-hmm.
Overweight, his faults as an alcoholic and drug abuser and all of that.
Yeah, he was the best general of his time. There's no doubt about it. I mean, after Alexander died, Chandragupta Maurya came close, but Alexander was top rate. Olivia?
I have one question. Was he the guy who, when he was dying, he left his empire to himself?
No.
Who was that? Wasn't there someone who did that?
Not that I know of. And there was somebody like Shin Sherwang D who thought he would live forever, but I don't think so.
Okay, because I thought he left it to himself when he was dying.
No.
How do you leave it to yourself? No. Yeah, no,
that was
the thing.
No, he said to himself, I'll leave it to the strongest, by which he meant somebody else.
Because wouldn't he be the strongest?
Yeah, that's kind of circular argument, isn't it? Yeah. Taylor, what do you think?
Well, I mean, his empire didn't really last after him, but, like, he still had things that lasted. Like, Alexandria still has its legacy, like, as the greatest library ever.
In memory, yes. Yeah. So those who will learn later that library got trashed.
But, like...
But it lasted for 700 years before it got trashed. Yeah, Olivia?
It also has the lighthouse.
Or what's left of it, yeah.
Yeah, and that was one of the wonders of the world.
Yes, this is true. The lighthouse of Pharos, which Alexander set up largely to encourage trade. Yeah, true. Amanda?
Well, he did a really good job of, like, spreading Greek culture, and just culturally he really did.
Okay, which raises an interesting question. Maybe in the end that Alexander's empire wasn't political or military, but cultural. And maybe that means more. Quite possibly. Tyler?
I think when he said leave it to the strongest, like, it was certainly like a justified idea. Like, it should work.
Mm-hmm.
It works in theory, at least.
Yeah.
Even though it didn't work in real life. The other things he did, like, for his in such a short time that, like, no one else has been able to do. That was pretty good.
Okay, yeah, it's true that he conquered all Persia in 8 years. It was arguably the most rapid conquest of anything that size that had ever happened in human history. I'd certainly say that. Stephen.
Well, Philip did give Alexander his start, but that might be like a flaw. But after that, he really took it and ran. And pull out with what he was taught.
Okay, in other words, when you're starting something, there's no idea whether you're going to succeed or whether you're going to blow it, right?
Exactly.
And Alexander clearly didn't blow it. Not in the short term, anyway. Lucas?
With the impact that he had on the world, like, then with this huge empire, and even today with all the cultural things that we have from the Greeks,
mm-hmm.
like, nothing can really compare to that. Him being an alcoholic, that's enough. And there's a bunch of alcoholics in the world, there's still good people.
Okay. It's kind of interesting, because when Julius Caesar was marching around trying to conquer places, in fact, the Roman generals in general, when they were marching around trying to conquer places, what standard did they use to compare their reputations?
Oh, Alexander
did. Yeah, they were mindful of him. Well, as we see when we do the Rome unit, what's really interesting is guess who the Romans claimed ancestry from? It wasn't anybody in Italy.
Macedonians?
No, it wasn't anybody Greek or Macedonian. Go back even earlier. Have any of you taken Latin?
Yeah.
Have you heard somebody named Aeneas?
Yes, he founded Rome.
He supposedly founded Rome, exactly. Or at least he landed there and laid the cultural foundation of the city, although the city wasn't started until centuries after he died. Guess where Aeneas was from?
Troy. He fled after that.
So, in part, as we'll see in the next unit, Roman history was about revenge against whom?
The Greeks.
Yep. Yep. Then there's that other story, that Romulus Remus story, and the she-wolf. There's a little stinger in that story having to do with Latin slang, but I'll wait until the Rome unit to expose you to that.
What was that with, like, he stepped over a wall, so he died?
What?
Yeah, like he told him not to come over the wall.
But the wall was like a mound of dirt or something.
That may be so. I don't know the story to tell you the truth. Let me know sometime. Find out something solid.
They're brothers.
Yeah, I'd love to know that. Okay. Has anybody changed his or her mind? Firm in that opinion. Okay. So let it be done. Here's what we're going to do tomorrow when we gather. It's the last reading of the unit. We're going to see what was happening in this Hellenistic period politically, culturally, religiously, scientifically, philosophically. There's a whole lot of stuff we need to do tomorrow. And then by Wednesday, we're efficient. We'll be into review. Certainly on Wednesday, ladies and gentlemen, certainly on Wednesday, what should you have ready with you?
Questions.
Yeah, and something I gave you to prepare for the bitter end of this unit. Yeah, I gave you a review sheet, right? Look it over.
Yes,
it's in your package. I have extra coffee in case you missed it. Yeah?
I have two other tests.
You do? Okay, well, we'll do what we need to do. I just don't want to crowd your due date for the meet your lot people when you're missing out. What about Friday?
I can do it.
Sure. Okay, that'll be good. Yeah. Then you have it behind you before the weekend.
Thursday.
What are we taking?
Sick.